Preston in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on 990 WDEO.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other. Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
Yeah, people wonder a lot about the new evangelization.
You're re-evangelizing the de-Christianized.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
The vast number of Catholics have been sacramentalized but not evangelized.
I'm talking about God, the devil, hell, heaven.
To be Catholic is to evangelize.
He's absolutely right.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, it's always a joy to be with you.
What is your quest?
Build the church, bless the nation.
We are go for launch.
10, 9.
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
Let's do this.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
A very good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, and we've got 2 hours to talk about the things that matter most. I promised on Friday that Father Paul Cech, the founder of Courage, will be joining us. Courage is the ministry that is recognized by the church as an aid or assistance to those faithful Catholics who are struggling with same-sex attraction. And on Friday we had some direct to my desk, and we asked the question, should I attend my gay friend or family member's wedding? Well, there are a number of other questions related to this. Should a chaste Catholic with same-sex attraction celebrate, quote, celebrate their gayness? What is spiritual friendship? Should there be lifelong pledging of lives one to another so a chaste couple can be kind of a quasi-union? All these questions are going to come up when I talk to Father Cech later today. So, this is again, following up to our conversation on Friday. Also coming up today, Marcellino D'Ambrosio, and Dr. D'Ambrosio is really a great communicator, and he's written a very helpful book. It's called When the Church Was Young, Voices of the Early Fathers. Well, this, of course, being Lent, a time when many of us are doing types of spiritual reading that maybe we haven't done before, and acquaintance with the various church fathers is helpful. I mean, you can pick up a volume like Marcellino's and read through it. But sometimes you find a father of the church that just hits you right. I mean, when I remember way back when I was studying history of Christian thought, I came across Irenaeus, St. Irenaeus. And I was just shocked at his writing and his insight on things. So for a long time, he was my favorite of the church fathers. So lots of people have that experience. They don't read the whole bunch of them, but they find certain of the fathers who, you know, I'd say sings to them. Also coming up today, a haunting memoir of 6 months in North Korea. Suki Kim was teaching English to the college-age sons of North Korea's elite. This is unprecedented access. The world knows virtually nothing about these young men, and they're among the select few that are permitted to live in the nation's capital, Pyongyang. This description, haunting is a good word for it. It's a place where your senses are never left in peace. You got marching tunes and love songs blasting from speakers, and virtually every building is adorned with a slogan. The TV screens are constantly filled with the same image. While she was there, it was that of the great leader, Kim Jong-il, who has now been succeeded. In fact, he died the day she was leaving North Korea, and successor Kim Jong-un is who we have today. But we'll talk about some of these distinctions. Fascinating story. It's told in the book, Without You, There Is No Us. Great title. We'll explore exactly what that means. My read of this brought me in contact with what, in my mind, is a terrifying alien world that basic laws of logic don't seem to apply, and there's a lack of curiosity about the outside world. And so we're going to spend time. We're going to spend time with Suki Kim And she'll, you know, share with us her experience there at the all-male Pyong University of Science and Technology. It's kind of like the MIT of North Korea. I suppose you can think of it that way. But before we talk with Suki, let's get to today's headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, March 16th. It is the Feast of St. Louise de Marillac, and today's news is sponsored in part by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at charitymobile.com. A Vatican official says the Catholic Church supports the use of force against ISIS to prevent the genocide of Middle Eastern religious and ethnic minorities. Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, the Vatican's top envoy at the UN in Geneva, thinks without military action, the international community will end up wondering how it left such a terrible tragedy happen. He also said any coalition fighting ISIS needs to include Muslim states. Tomasi has co-authored a statement calling for countries to provide more humanitarian aid to people displaced by the conflicts in Iraq and Syria. Also, members of the Taliban have launched a suicide bombing yesterday against a Catholic church and a Protestant church in Pakistan, leaving at least 14 dead. The Pakistani Bishops' Conference issued a statement deploring the bombing and calling upon all people of Pakistan to stand alongside their Christian brothers and sisters against extremist forces. The statement demanded extraordinary measures by the government to protect religious minorities and instructed Christians to avoid violence and to cooperate with the police in their investigations. In yesterday's Angelus address, Pope Francis said, quote, "With pain, with much pain, I learned of the terrorist attacks today against two churches in the city of Lahore in Pakistan, which have resulted in numerous deaths and injuries. There are Christian churches. Christians are being persecuted. Our brothers and sisters' blood is shed only because they are Christians," end quote. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said today that as long as he is leader, a Palestinian state will not be established. In a video interview, he said, quote, "I think anyone who is going to establish a Palestinian state today and evacuate lands is giving attack grounds to the radical Islam establishment of Israel. Anyone who ignores this is sticking his head in the sand. The left does this time and time again. We are realistic and understand." End quote. And in a bizarre case, the attorney for accused murderer Robert Durst says he is not guilty of murder.
Bob Durst didn't kill Susan Berman. He's ready to end all the rumor and speculation and have a trial. But we're frustrated because the local authorities are considering filing charges on him here and holding him here.
Attorney Dick DeGuerin says Durst is preparing to head to Los Angeles for a trial after waiving his extradition this morning in New Orleans. The New York real estate heir was arrested on a murder warrant over the weekend. He was the subject, though, of the HBO documentary The Jinx, where on last night's finale he muttered into a live microphone, quote, "What the heck did I do? Killing them all, of course," end quote. The 71-year-old is linked to at least three murders. And now your fascinating fact for the day. M&M's were developed so that soldiers could eat candy without getting their trigger fingers sticky. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. My guest, Suki Kim, is the author of the award-winning novel, The Interpreter, and she's a recipient of Guggenheim and Fulbright Fellowships. She's been traveling to North Korea as a journalist since 2002. Her writing appears in the New York Times, Harper's, New York Review of Books. She was born and raised in Seoul, South Korea, and she migrated to the United States when she was 13. She now lives in New York, but has, of course, returned back to Korea. She's the author of a haunting memoir called Without You, There Is No Us, My Time with the Sons of North Korea's Elite. Suki, it's good to have you with me. Thanks.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
the title of the book, Without You, There Is No Us. I know a lot of our conversation is going to be unpacking that, but can you give us just a brief insight into the title?
It's a song that's actually really, really popular in North Korea. I was undercover there as a teacher at this private university for all-male university, and my students used to march to the cafeteria singing that song three meals a day, and it's obviously Without You, There Is No Us. So you is the great leader.
The great leader. When was the cult of the great leader established? You were there during the time of Kim Jong-il, but his father, I suppose, Kim Il-sung, initiated that cult of the great leader?
Yes. Kim Il-sung, who died in 1994, was the original great leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually the grandfather of the current great leader, who's Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there during the era of Kim Jong-il, which we probably all remember when he died in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually living in Pyongyang at the time.
You were just, you were just wrapping up, weren't you?
It was actually my last day.
Yeah.
I was a part of this university. I was actually writing a book, but I was with the Sons of North Korea's elite at this university. And on my last day there, Kim Jong-il died. So that's the son of the original great leader. And who we have now, Kim Jong-un, is a grandson.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything parallel to this kind of focus on a political leader that Americans might relate to?
You know, it is really, you know, the whole country. I think the easiest way to think about it is really a cult, personality cult.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than looking at it as sort of a political system, it is a political system, like brutal, brutal military dictatorship, but it's using these, you know, cult personality ideology, like a personality cult of the great leader. The great leader is kind of like a cross between a parent and God, who created the universe.
Okay.
So, you know, that's why everything in that country is you know, has is the songs about the great leader, television's about the great leader, every newspaper article's about the great leader, every blank space wall in North Korea is covered with a great leader portrait.
Wow.
Even if you go to the mountains, every actual mountain surfaces would be inscribed with the great leader's slogan, like every surface of the mountain.
Wow.
So there isn't, as every citizen wears the badge of the great leader. So basically everything is marked by the great leader.
Unbelievable. That. Now, you were there when Kim Jong-il died in December of 2011. So when the great leader dies, is it like a collapse of a universe?
Well, you know, I was there in this isolated compound with this 270 young men, all age 20, 19 at the time, and, you know, I can only attest to the world I saw, because you're never allowed to go anywhere in North Korea. But, you know, having said that, at the time, you know, I was embedded there. It was my fifth time in North Korea, and I was embedded there for months and months and months, and I knew these kids really well, as if, you know, I felt like they were my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So because I knew them well, I could really feel what they were feeling.
Yes.
And what I felt in them was this unbelievable sorrow. Like what you said, universe ended, and I think it's quite an understandable emotion on some level, because it's different from, I think, what people saw on television, which is this exaggerated, you know, weeping on the streets, which obviously some photographer or journalist were photographing those. So, I mean, I think that's more staged.
Mm-hmm.
I thought my kids was just like, you know, as if their father died. And I think that's really like, even if any of them had an inkling their great leader was not so great, like, you know, it is actually their entire world ever since birth revolves around this one person. You know, holidays are great leader's birthday, you know, which is called the Day of the Sun, because the great leader is the sun, you know?
Wow. Now, you were there for, what, 6 months on this project?
During that, yes, from July through December of 2011, which was actually the Juche year 100. Okay. So what that means is to say North Korea's foundational philosophy originally set up by the original great leader, meaning self-reliance, that year, they count their calendar system according to the birth of the great leader also.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that year was the 100th year, 2011. Now, so that's when I was there, and also the year Kim Jong-il died.
Wow. So you were at the, I think you described this somewhere as the MIT of North Korea?
Pyongyang University of Science and Technology.
Yeah. And the students, were these all male students?
Yes, they were all men.
All male. And then they were high achievers?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were incredibly hard workers and really lovely. And they just basically, you know, our schedules were mapped out. Also, none of us were allowed out. We were in this military guarded compound in the suburb of Pyongyang.
Wow.
But another really fascinating thing is that that year, say year 100,
yes,
they actually closed down every university in entire North Korea and put all the university students in construction fields. The official reason they gave was so that they can build, it's a North Korean slogan, which is a powerful and prosperous nation. They were going to build that nation in order to celebrate the original great leader's 100th birthday, you know, although he died in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they had to close down every university, but only these 270 young men did not escaped their fate, and they were in the school I was at, the sons of elite.
Now, explain to us how you got such access. I mean, that's unbelievable that you had that kind of access in such a state. How did you do that?
Well, this university is a very, very unusual university. You know, I've been covering North Korea since 2002 when I went in to actually do a writing about the 65th birthday celebration of Kim Jong-il. So I kept going in, and, you know, there's just no way of seeing North Korea because it's all propaganda based by the government. But I found out during one of those times, which was the Philharmonic in Pyongyang time, I actually went in that time also, and I found out about this school, and that was basically being set up by these evangelical Christians who had been courting the North Korean regime to go and set up a business, which is this university. It cost $35 million to build and, of course, a lot more to fund and operate. And North Korea doesn't pay a penny of it. No teachers get paid because everybody is basically funded by their churches back home.
Right.
These are evangelical Christians from around the world.
Okay.
So it's all foreigners. And they made a deal where they struck some agreements where they will not proselytize, because proselytizing is a capital crime in North Korea.
Yes.
But so these group of evangelicals do not proselytize, but they made a deal where they go in and set up this school to educate the future leaders.
Okay.
You know, so that's why I went in with them.
Okay, you went in with them. And we'll come back on the other side of this break and continue conversation with Suki Kim, author of Without You, There Is No Us, An Unprecedented Look at Life in North Korea. I'm Al Cresta.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Hi, I'm Peggy Stanton, and I'm inviting you to join me on Power from the Pews when I interview the people who are engaged in remarkable ministries that are making a real difference in their parishes and the world. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Don't miss Wild Award-nominated musical The Cross in the Light, now touring as a spectacular music concert and digital projection experience in a church near you.
That was the most amazing performance.
It's just so inspiring. Every time I see it, I just feel closer and closer to the Lord.
It really sends the message, this is what He did for us.
21 performances, April 16th through May 16th. Buy tickets today at crossandlight.com or 734-788-7073.
Are you looking to lower your car payment and get into a beautiful new car, truck, SUV, or minivan with gas mileage up to 40 miles per gallon? Well, you can. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and during our award season event going on now, you can choose from 7 acres of inventory and drive a Dodge Dart or Charger for as low as $99 per month, a new Chrysler 200 or Town & Country for as low as $164 per month, only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Did you know that Ave Maria Town in Southwest Florida is really growing?
Tell me about it.
Ave Maria truly is one of the nation's fastest growing master planned new home communities.
Is that because there's no snow?
Well, the weather sure helps, but Ave Maria, Florida is a unique place.
How so?
The town of Ave Maria has been designed as a hometown for the 21st century, a place where residents of different generations and backgrounds can find all they need to live life to the fullest. School, shopping, employment opportunities, and more. In addition, the presence of Ave Maria University, a Catholic university that is both excellent and affordable.
Sounds great. What else?
Houses are being sold starting in the low 200s with several communities to choose from. There's a private Catholic K-12 school along with golf, bike trails, a fitness center, not to mention several daily masses and adoration within walking distance.
So how can I arrange a visit?
Call Carol at 239-249-2111. That's Carol Carpenter at Berkshire Hathaway, 239-249-2111. This Ave Maria radio program is brought to you in part by St. Gregory Retreat Centers, the new standard for recovery. St. Gregory Retreat Centers offers substance abuse treatment options using traditional Catholic teaching about virtue and access to daily Mass and reconciliation, combined with the latest evidence-based practices in substance abuse. More information is available at 888-778-5833 or online at stgregoryctr.com.
Are you the person others come to for advice? Are you the shoulder friends lean on when they're struggling? Along with its clinical programs offered on-site in the greater D.C. area, the Institute for the Psychological Sciences is now offering an online MS in psychology so that you're better equipped to help people to flourish. Could God be calling you to pursue a graduate-level psychology degree rooted in the Catholic understanding of the human person? Learn more at www.healourculture.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. With me, Suki Kim. She is the author of Without You, There Is No Us. It's her time with the sons of North Korea's elite. And it's a remarkable story. She had 6 months teaching there at the Pyong University of Science and Technology. You went in with to work in this university, which had been established by evangelical Protestant missionaries. And if I remember correctly, you don't espouse any Christian faith yourself, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. So was this difficult for you or for them?
You know, it was really, really difficult. And the problem with that is because it's actually really undercover journalism.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously an uncomfortable aspect to it. But when you're dealing with actually the world's most brutal regime,
right,
that the UN considers the world's violator of human rights,
mm-hmm,
and a place of gulag, I mean, it's really North Korea is a gulag closing its nation.
Yep.
There's no other way of investigating it.
Right.
So, you know, and they will not be investigated, which is why, you know, in 2015, we still have no unfiltered portrait coming out of North Korea, like none to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have things that journalists have written down in interviews with defectors who fled North Korea.
Yes.
But we don't actually have actually what's going on inside the country. So, you know, this is just one way of me getting in, which mm-hmm was this school. It happened to be run by evangelical Christians. Whatever deal that they struck with the North Korean regime in order to set up that school, it provided a chance for me to go in. And actually what I was interested in was about the psychology of the elite of that country,
mm-hmm,
and how that country is operating so that we have this unthinkable nation existing today.
I know.
That nobody can do anything about.
I know.
Everybody's waiting for their country to fall.
It's
amazing. It's not happening. It's been in existence for 60-some years. So what are we going to do about it, you know?
Yeah, no, I reading your book, I'm baffled that a regime can maintain such a stranglehold on its people so that it doesn't... let's talk about the students themselves, because you wanted to humanize them in the book. That was part of the project. And, in fact, you do, in fact... You came to love them, right?
I absolutely came to love them.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that. You know, I think I went in there just to understand the place on a totally just human level. How is this going on? What are we going to do about it? And, you know, what I found there was just a bunch of 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds. And they could have been my sons, your sons, and, you know, but they were just completely controlled by the regime. None of these kids have ever been able to do a single thing on their own. Not allowed. Not move about in their country. They've been never outside of their hometown. And, you know, nothing. They couldn't do anything when I tried to teach them. Like, essay writing was impossible because there is no critical thinking in that country.
Wow. Now, there's a category there of employee called the minders. Who are the minders?
There were two categories. There were minders who basically watch you 24/7. So they live in the teacher dormitory in the campus on the ground floor, and their job was to basically watch you. They took the teachers out on group outings, organized outings, and all you ever get to be taken to would be some great leader-related national monument and get, you know, shown this propaganda speak. And then there was this other, and those minders are basically with you constantly. And then this other group called counterparts, and those were the North Korean staff that oversaw the lesson, because you couldn't teach them anything, the kids anything, without getting it approved first by the counterparts.
Okay, so the counterparts approved what you were doing, and the minders basically followed you and watched what you were doing so they could report it. What about the students? Did they have any loyalty to you?
No, students were also reporting on, every class, we were told, it's not my guessing, we were told every class was reported on and recorded.
Wow.
And one student, you know, did that. I never knew who that was. I ate every meal with them, so it would be me and three students at every meal. And the way I understood it more and more, you know, it took me a while to understand what was going on there, was that the students reported on each other. You know, so that they were all like paired up together.
Oh.
They were never on their own. So that at first I just thought they were all best friends. But then, of course, it dawned on me, you know, as I was with them for months and months, it was always two together, the two exact students. It was like a buddy system, so that, you know, one can look at it as friendship, but another way to look at it is actually the watching system.
Yeah. These are 19, 20-year-olds, do they think about the world outside? Do they speculate on the existence of God, or, you know, the source of morals and ethics? Do they ask big questions?
But their God is the great leader.
Okay, so that's settled. All right.
Yeah, that's settled. Yeah, I mean that's just like there's nothing else. You know,
okay.
Without you, there is no us. It's literally nothing else.
Okay.
You know, God or no God, but like nothing else. No other concept at all exists without the great leader. And they're not allowed, you know, so which is why such a tight control. I mean, it was science and technology school. A lot of their majors were computer. They didn't even know the existence of the internet. You know, so,
wow.
I mean, to that degree of control.
Ah.
So it's like a control of information, control of physical movement, and control of any voluntary will, because they've never, I mean, their hours were mapped out from 5:30 until they went to bed, all of which had to do, if it was not a classroom lessons with me, the rest of it was about some great leader exercises.
Really? Do they make jokes? Do they have a sense of irony or humor?
Absolutely. You know, I think that's the remarkable thing about humanity, that even if you try to tremble and squash and control, you know, I mean, humans are unique and humans are beautiful and lovely. And, you know, that's what, you know, they were hilarious. You know, you talk about girls and at first, they're 19, you know, at first, had no interest. They only were building their nation with a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, months passed, and they started admitting they had girlfriends at home. But even if they did, you know, they were also not allowed to be in touch with home.
Wow.
So, you know, it's not like these relationships could go anywhere because they couldn't really be in touch with the outside of the campus. So, you know, there were this, like, you know, what was so heartbreaking was, like, I would have meals with them every day, and they get adorable. I mean, they're 19. They, like, make jokes and, like, little nasty jokes and love it if I, like, you know, become a little bit like, you know, I'm like, gosh, it's, like, disgusting what you just said, you know, and they would just start giggling. But then, you know, I would look at their great leader badge, and I would realize, oh, this is Kang Yang, and this is actually their future's map after that.
Wow. You right, that you were surprised by how much the students lied. What did they lie about and why?
They lied all the time. And they lied, like, so naturally. And their lies, and that also took me a while to understand, their lies were all in different tiers, you know. Sometimes they lied to protect their system because they did all these great leader duties. Like, there was a great leader building in
yes.
the campus.
Okay.
And then they had to guard that 24/7.
They had to
like,
guard...
Empty building.
So this is kind of a shrine to the great leader?
Yeah, it's like in their own version of a church in a way. Like,
okay.
It's like where they go in and they study the great leader studies every day. They did, like, great leader studies every day. So they, you know, guard that. Even if it's, like, minus 40 degrees, they would guard it. And
wow.
But then, like, I would tell them, like, so what did you do last night? And I saw them guarding the building, but they would say, like, they didn't, you know.
Oh.
They slept really well. And so there were these kind of things I realized are always about protecting their system. But sometimes they, like, you know, lied for no reason, just some nonsense. They would say they cloned a rabbit when they were fifth graders. And they would swear by it. And I would say that's not possible. And they would all say, yes, they did it. And then I realized, oh, sometimes, like, maybe someone told them to say it. Or, you know, and then also they were taught so many lies. You know, they said, like, they were taught in their science class that playing basketball makes you grow taller. And I was like, you know, that's
really?
The most non-scientific thing I've ever heard.
Right.
And your old science major, the School of Science and Technology. But I realized at those times there were taught lies.
Oh.
You know, so these are all a little different. And sometimes it's a habit. If you keep lying,
yeah. The
lies become kind of natural. So I realized that there were all different tiers of lies. And when I realized what was going on, I think it actually made me feel more empathetic towards them.
Yes.
Because I thought, why 19-year-olds you have to lie, you know, this system, how inhumane is this system, you know?
Hmm.
It makes them lie in
yeah.
order to survive.
Yeah, yeah. What did they know about the outside world? So what did they know about the West? And what was their attitude towards, say, the United States?
The United States is their enemy number one.
Okay.
It's their imperialistic United States. You know, it is like they've been taught basically to kill every American is how they get raised.
Hmm.
You know, however, you know, I have to say, like, you know, sometimes I would tell them, but, like, what about me? I'm also American. You know, I'm also a South Korean, an American, your enemy. And they'll say, oh, but that's different. You know, you're a teacher.
Right.
I think, like, there's this, like, propaganda speak, and there's, like, a personal level. You
mm-hmm.
know, personally,
mm-hmm.
they absolutely adored me and were devastated when I was leaving.
Yes.
And I'm American, you know?
Yes,
and
sure.
So I think, like, it's just two things were completely at odds, you know, with each other.
Can they imagine the wealth and freedom, the color, the music, the entertainment of the West?
You know, I think that people would love to think that North Koreans are, like, all getting the idea what it's like outside. I don't think they can. I think you get snippets. You know, I believe, you know, they probably, you know, sneak some in the DVD that's illegal, might have seen here and there. But that still doesn't mean any of that computes for them, you know? They live in this completely gray world where they have one channel with a great leader, and they have all these duties, and they have zero time to really even think about any of those things.
Oh.
And it's the kind of, like, you know, life on the moon, you know? Like, what we, you know, we might get a little glimpse, but we don't really get it, what
yeah.
it would be like to be on it.
Right.
And I think it's kind of like that, where it's just so abstract for them. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just like, this is just random stuff. You know, they didn't know what passport was, or, you know, these words that pop up in a textbook. You know, like
yeah.
economy class, they had no idea because they don't know what it's like to fly on an airplane.
Yeah.
And they thought that meant economic lessons on a plane. Like, you have to take classes on economics.
Wow.
You know, because they didn't understand this concept of economic class. So, I mean, it was like, where do you begin, you know?
Mm. We've only got about 60 seconds left, but in such a collectivist society, do they even develop a strong sense of ego? Are they able to say, I am?
You know, I don't really, you know, I think I think the instinct is there, but it gets squashed over and over and over again. And what squashes it is a fear, the fear of the system that has things like gulag and persecutes its own citizens. You know, 10th of the population dies from a famine, and they will still not lift a finger. So I think that it's all squashed, which is why it's important to humanize that.
Yes, indeed.
As a human being.
Suki, thank you so much. I hope we can talk again. I have to say, this is one of those fascinating memoirs I've read in a long, long time. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Although the internet wasn't around during the time Jesus walked this earth, I would bet he would have something to say about how we communicate in cyberspace. In fact, he might have something to say about netiquette, the etiquette of internet communication. Flaming, for instance, is the act of hostile and insulting interaction between internet users. Some people post or send offensive messages over the internet with the intent of hurting others. As Christians, we know this is not how Christ would want us to communicate, whether it be face-to-face or over cyberspace. So before you hit send when writing an email or click the post button on a social media site, read exactly what you wrote and delete the flaming words. Always, always communicate with netiquette. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, the communication evangelist.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Why is there such a prevalence of anti-Christian antagonism throughout the developing world? It's seen in the mass media daily. Who is the man at the center of all this? Why do so many openly despise him? On the next Christ is the Answer program, Father Ricardo delves into the question of, who is Jesus? Is he the Lord, a liar, or a lunatic? Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Men, it's time to rise up, to accept the challenge, to become that for which you were made. Join hundreds of other men when you participate in the Diocese of Lansing's 7th Annual Men's Conference, Saturday, April 25th from 8:30 to 3 at St. Mary Magdalene Church in Brighton. This year, hear inspirational messages from Bert Gezzi and Matthew Leonard, music by Brian Flynn, and Mass with Bishop Earl Boyer. Learn more and register at acceptthechallenge.org. That's acceptthechallenge.org.
Hi, Deacon Tom here, asking for phone volunteers for Ave Maria Radio Spring Membership Drive, April 6th through the 10th. We start the Monday after Easter. It's coming soon. If you or your group can spare a couple of hours of time, April 6th through the 10th, just call Cheryl Bertil at 877-288-1077 or send her an email at volunteer@AveMariaRadio.net. Another easy way to help is to go to our homepage at AveMariaRadio.net and click the volunteer button. God bless you.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. As we make our Lenten journey, I invite you to join with me and thousands of others in a Lenten prayer for life. You will find it at priestsforlife.org. Lent is a season in which we prepare to celebrate Christ's total victory over death and our share in his life by baptism. Death was not part of God's original plan for us. Scripture says that God created all things that they may have life, and that he does not rejoice in the destruction of the living. Standing with Christ in his new life means standing against whatever destroys life. The Lenten Prayer for Life renews us in our commitment to be the people of life. It can be prayed each day by families, school classes, parishes, and individuals. Download the Lenten Prayer for Life at priestsforlife.org. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Tresta. Joining me right now is Father Paul Cech. He is the director of Courage. It's an organization which exists to help Catholics live faithful lives of chastity, even as they struggle with same-sex attraction. He's been executive director of Courage since 2008, and he established a Courage chapter in the Diocese of Bridgeport back in 2002. He holds an STL from the University of the Holy Cross and an STB from the Gregorian University, and you can find out, and I hope you will find out more about this ministry by going to CourageRC.org. That's CourageRC.org. Father, thanks for joining me.
Al, thank you for the gracious invitation.
Let me ask questions, because more and more people are realizing that they're going to have to come up with some clear thinking about homosexuality, and that it's becoming a public, a social phenomenon that very few of us will escape. Well, we're going to be asked to go to weddings. We're going to have friends whose sons and daughters come out. And using the right language is important. So let me ask let me ask a question about a phrase in the Catechism. When same-sex attractions are called disordered, some people think that's a harsh term. How do you respond?
Well, there's no doubt that the phrase from the Catechism, objectively disordered, will fall hard on ears, and people will immediately associate that with a moral condemnation of an individual. It takes a moment or two to explain, but the phrase, as you've quoted it, does not, in the Catechism, apply to a person. It applies to an appetite, to an attraction. Perhaps another way of saying it is that the Church understands the homosexual inclination to be a poverty, that what is supposed to be there is missing. And what is supposed to be there? In the first case, it is that a man has an ease with, a comfort with, and a happiness with his masculine identity. Many of the men who are part of Courage will say that they feel a void in this way, that there is something that they think is missing that makes them in some way less than a man. Now, we know that they aren't less than a man, objectively speaking, but this is a feeling that they have. So the first poverty would be in terms of masculine identity. And flowing from that, the second poverty, something that should be there that's not, is the natural attraction of a man to a woman or a woman to a man. So these ideas that the Church has are, of course, based in her understanding of the creation story. And it takes a moment or two to explain, to reflect calmly, if that's what someone would like to do. But there's a rational basis and a basis that's grounded in the Church's desire that people find joy and fulfillment in accordance with the way God has made us.
With this, so we know that the Church will never sanction homosexual so-called marriage. What possibilities are there for the person who is same-sex attracted, who longs for the kind of personal commitment and intimacy, not sexual per se, or at least not genital, let's put it that way, What are the options for, we'll say, a mature Catholic who wants, accepts the Church's teaching, but wants to know what he does with those feelings of pledge? He would love to pledge to somebody, a lifelong commitment. What does he do with those?
All right. Well, it's a good question, and again, it's one that I think will take a moment or two to unfold.
Sure,
let's
please.
Go to St. Thomas Aquinas and make a distinction that St. Thomas makes when he distinguishes continence from chastity. St. Thomas describes continence, which means no genital sexual activity. He describes continence as an imperfect virtue. And the reason he calls it an imperfect virtue is because we don't yet know why someone is not entering into that realm. Is it because there's no one available, there's no interest, There's a fear of a pregnancy. There's a fear of scandal. There's a fear of a sexually transmitted disease. Or there is that understanding that the sexual faculty is for giving self, for giving life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's an important distinction here, it seems to me, with regard to the question that you've asked, because there is more to our understanding about how two people are together than just whether they are refraining from physical contact.
Right.
Chastity is that integration of the sexual desire or attraction into the human person in such a way that it testifies to what God told us about our story when he created the first people. And he urged them to be fruitful and multiply by the two becoming one flesh.
Yes.
So I don't, it's a long answer to your question, but there is a basis here for it. I think we would do people a disservice if we said, well, you can in some way commit yourself to someone else apart from genuine friendship if the bar is only set at avoiding genital sexual activity.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, again, I want to talk about the best circumstance here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of instances where two men struggling with same at one time struggling with same-sex attraction come to support one another in a friendship
mm-hmm.
and regard each other as somehow, in some way, as a, quote, couple? And is that healthy?
I think that would be contrary to the church's understanding of what same-sex friendship is.
Sure, go ahead.
Same-sex friendship is not going to have an erotic component to it.
Right. I think that is settled in my mind. The question is. That being settled, is there still a drive to want to have a, quote, partner?
Well, I think probably there is because, as my friend Dr. Jay Budashevsky says and writes, we are blessedly incomplete.
Right.
So we know that in and of ourselves something is lacking and missing. And, of course, ultimately what we are missing is made up for only in Jesus Christ. But what else is missing in us leads us to step out of ourselves in relationships and friendships. But the kind of exclusivity that I think you're speaking
right.
about
mm-hmm.
is reserved to conjugal love
okay.
and spousal love, even if it's not genitally sexually expressed.
Okay. So that's
otherwise,
good.
Friendship doesn't have that that aspect of exclusivity about it.
So that's critical. Friendship. As strong as might be, and we have best friends, we know that.
Right.
But it
yes.
doesn't have that kind of exclusive pledge of soul
yes.
fidelity that marriage
yes.
does. Okay.
I think that's the distinction, yes.
Okay. So it would be, in your estimation, unhealthy for a person to make that kind of marital pledge, that's not the word I want to use, but exclusive friendship pledge, even if they are not engaging in genital contact?
Well, I would be concerned to know what the motivation was before I was able to better understand
okay.
the direction that it's going, because I wouldn't want to presume someone's intentions. But
right.
even in the case of people who are strong and good close friends, there isn't a separation of that partnership that implies somehow that there can't be an openness and a welcoming
to others
yeah. that would be equally fruitful.
Yes. No, that's good. I like that. That clarifies a good deal. Now, does Courage use a 12-step process?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the answer would be a qualified yes, but not all the time. Why do I say that? When Courage first began in the 1980s, the original members of Courage, it first was founded by Father John Harvey under the supervision of Cardinal Cook, and then seven men met in Lower Manhattan. There was a need to provide our members, and then even as it grew in the early years, a tool, a means to separate themselves from things that were obviously not only causing them distress, but bringing them away from Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, the 12 steps are very beneficial because they're directed towards a kind of self-knowledge and clarification of one's proper identity, and then practical steps to heal wounds and to step out. I think the danger today when people hear 12 steps in homosexuality, they can tend to think that from the standpoint of the Catholic Church, everyone who has a homosexual inclination must be some kind of a sex addict, for instance. We
right,
don't believe that at all.
Right, right.
We don't believe that at all. So I find that there are men and there are groups where the 12 steps are very beneficial, moving someone away perhaps from the homosexual life, moving them away from pornography, and in that sense very, very useful. But I think there are other people for whom another method will be valuable because they have a little bit more freedom. And while working the steps can be very good, still, we can move to the Sermon on the Mount. We can move to the Beatitudes. We can move to the cardinal virtues. We can move to the theological virtues. And those are also ways for us
sure.
to deepen our identity and how to live and act. Yeah.
What does Courage think about these organizations that hold out as prospects for, to same-sex attracted people, that they can change their orientation?
Well, I think we have to be very careful with vocabulary. First of all, I would suggest that orientation suggests something fixed, and the word orients itself tells us in a certain direction.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Father, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
We'll come back to this on the other side of the break, because
okay.
I realize this is going to take some clarification, and I thank you very much for being so patient. We're going to be back with you in just a few minutes.
Lent is a time for reflection and holiness in preparation for Easter, and it's also time for a great deal on a new car or truck. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and during our awards season event going on now, you can choose any Jeep Cherokee, Grand Cherokee, Wrangler, Compass, or Patriot from our 7 acres of inventory for as low as $219 per month. All the latest and best styling and safety features, and up to 30 miles per gallon for as low as $219 per month. Only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by our day sponsor, Covenant Environmental, your heating, cooling, and industrial ventilation specialists, who wish to extend their gratitude to all our priests and religious for saying yes to God's call. You can have your own day on Ave Maria Radio. Call toll-free 1-877-288-1077 and say, I want to be a day sponsor.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. Each week we go into the Ave Maria CD library. We pull on a talk or two to see what our Lord might have to say to us. Most of these talks are recorded at area gatherings and conferences. Most of the speakers are nationally known. The topics are varied, but they are all centered on the Lord, and they all are worth your listening time. You're back from Mass. It's not yet dinner time. Why not sit back and join us? Be fed on the Lord. Listen this and every Sunday afternoon at 3 for Putting On the Mind of Christ on 990 WDEO in the Metro Detroit area and 1440 WMAX in the Saginaw Valley. Putting On the Mind of Christ is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Al Cresta. We're going to be continuing the conversation with Father Paul Cech on the other side of the news break, where we'll, again, in the second hour, be able to go into further depth in this area. We left off with the question about does courage encourage a change of orientation? And, of course, the language here is important. So we're going to come back on the other side of the break, news break, to talk about it. Let me remind you that tonight on The Journey Home, Marcus Grodi is going to be interviewing Brendan Barker. Brendan's a former Baptist and evangelical. And that'll be at 8 Eastern on EWTN television. That's The Journey Home tonight. Again, Marcus will be interviewing Brendan Barker. Now, tomorrow, on Mother Angelical Live Classics, Mother will be talking about the mercy of God, especially appropriate because Pope Francis has just now proclaimed a Jubilee Year of Mercy. So this is going to be, again, a focus upon that concept, which is very alien to today's world, the concept of God's mercy. Now, it's tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN television. And let me say, we're delighted to have so many new affiliates with EWTN and with our co-productions of Crest in the Afternoon and Catholic Connection, The Doctor Is In. I want to say thanks to 88.7 FM, Morganfield, Kentucky, and 106.7 FM, St. Joseph, Missouri, and 1420 AM, Coatesville, Pennsylvania. It's good to have you with us. You can follow up on any of our conversations by going to AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. When you go there, go over to the Cresta Guest Archives, and there we've got information that follows up on the conversations that we're having. So today we'll have a good deal of material posted there on the Ministry of Courage. We'll also have some material posted on the previous interview about North Korea. And we'll also have material on the early church fathers after we finish today with Dr. Marcellino D'Ambrosio. So all that is available at AveMariaRadio.net. I'm Al Cresta.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. In Luke 5, Jesus invites Peter, weary from a night of fruitless fishing, back out onto the Sea of Galilee to cast his nets one more time and trust Jesus for the results. To cast into the deep is to let go of our own opinions, desires, and the way things or people should be. To cast into the deep, even where we have already fished with no results, is to let go of independence, autonomy, and self-determination. The sooner we realize that our Beloved is holding us in His hands, the sooner we can get about the business of doing our Father's will. The sooner we will become disciples. Proverbs sums up this great secret lesson learned by the saints. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to Him and He will make your path straight. Let go and trust the Lord to direct your activities and your life. He knows what He's doing.